Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, November 29th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and even Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 468. There's no guest. It's just me sitting on my couch in the dark a little bit, like a vampire, like a sad, like a melancholy vampire with NFL Red Zone on mute. And it's just me. This is going to be a good football Sunday. This kid, Kendall Hinton, who is an undrafted wide receiver from Wake Forest, he's going to start at quarterback for the Denver Broncos because all four of their quarterbacks have COVID or they're out. And it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to come on soon, so I'll be watching that. This kid played quarterback in high school at Southern Durham, and his coach said he's been waiting for this. This is the moment he's prepared for. So let's see. In high school, he played quarterback at Southern Durham High School in Durham, North Carolina. As a high school senior, Hinton threw for 3,972 yards and 39 touchdowns en route to a 3AA championship title. So, all right. I'm rooting for him. You know I'm rooting for him because he's a black quarterback. So, shit, man, get your scripts ready for this kid. I wish nothing but the best for this dude. I hope he makes some noise. Shout out to Bomani Jones for saying that, tweeting this yesterday. He said, you know, I watched Denver get to the playoffs without a quarterback, and it was fun. He's obviously talking about Tim Tebow. Then a bunch of people got mad. It's like, how come they got mad at him? But you know, I loved it because he, like I've said this before, he was definitely the, what do you call it? A black quarterback representative, because they didn't think he could do it. He was my black quarterback surrogate because he, people were hating on him so hard and he succeeded in spite of that. So that was a fun year on Twitter. That was a fun playoff run. Oh man. So hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. I hope it was good. I hope it was fucking worth it as the numbers continue to spike. Somebody sounds loud as fuck in the hallway. It's just because this area is so quiet. And is that a fucking dog? Sorry about that. When I'm around, I try to be quiet and stuff, but then people don't give a fuck. Maybe I'm becoming like a yeah, see, they're dogs. They're not supposed to be fucking dogs. Anyway, all right, I'm sorry. Thanksgiving. Kind of just chilled. Did Three Guys On. They did a special episode. If you're subscribe to their Patreon, you can check that out. You can subscribe to mine. There's stuff over there too. Subscribe to both of our Patreons. Get my album, Failed Running Back, wherever you listen, download and stream your favorite music. My stand-up is there. It's really funny, guys. No holds barred comedy. Oh my god, it was fun. Check it out if you find yourself in need of some laughs in these terrible times. I did not cook that much. I didn't cook any. I made some steamed broccoli in my steamer basket. That was the first time I had done that. It was good. I got some ribs from my favorite smokehouse in New Jersey, Red, White, and Q in beautiful Kearny, New Jersey. I didn't have any turkey. I just was not in the mood for it. But although they did have turkey there, I could have gotten some smoked turkey and maybe made a little gravy or something. But I was just like, whatever. I don't really care. I'm not pressed. And since I wasn't going to be with my parents, I did not really care at all. I got ribs and they were good. And yeah, I got like two meals off those ribs. Good stuff. And then this week's just been, it's been good to get away. Look at Cam Newton run. Tied up, 50 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Looks like he got hit. Unnecessary roughness. And they'll move the ball forward and hopefully they'll fucking win. I don't know. This is black on black quarterback crimes. Kyler Murray and Cam Newton going at it. Happy to see it happen, though. Just as long as nobody gets hurt. Anyway. But what was I saying? What was I talking about before I got racist talking about black quarterbacks? Talked about getting food. Yeah, it was chill. Like this week was good. This past week was good for me. It's good to get a break, just kind of be away, take some vacation days, just be away from doing TPS reports because I've been doing it all. You know, you feel me, and we talk about it all the time. It's good to be away from it for a little bit. And so it was good. I didn't play as much PlayStation as I thought I would. I started playing Control again, and it's a good game, but it's like, that's a weird and creepy game. That's a lot weirder and creepy than The Last of Us. That's like pretty straightforward. This is more like an X-Files-y type thing. And it's a little weird. And what I don't like about it is if you die, you got to start back from your checkpoint and do it all over again. I don't know. I just haven't played it in a while and I had to get used to it. So I'm back into that. I low-key still want to get Miles Morales. I'm hearing it's, you know, if it's anywhere as good as the first one, it's going to be fun. It's going to be dope to play with Miles Morales and get that Spider-Man suit, the Into the Spider-Verse suit. Haven't played that much, but I was glad that I got back into Control. That was good. What else? The fight last night. You would think that I was really concerned about these 50-year-old dudes fighting, and the person that broke my heart was Nate Robinson. I was not expecting that. That looked so bad to me, him getting knocked out by Jake Paul. As I was watching it, it looked like the worst thing that happened this year for black people. I'm sorry, it did. And we lost Kobe. And so many people died from this fucking pandemic and are continuing to die and get sick. To be honest, like that moment was just like, oh my God, it looked bad. It looked bad. You know how people say people were trying to post this thing, what looks racist but isn't? No, that just looked really racist. He got American history X'd. That looked bad. And I tweeted that shit and a handful of people like retweeted and liked it. I don't know if I was more famous, would that have done more numbers? But sometimes my takes are a little off kilter. But the people that fuck with it, they really get it. They understand. I guess that's just like this podcast in a lot of ways. But so it goes. The Mike Tyson and somebody sent, I was just out of it on Saturday or just washed. I'm trying to remember when I like fell asleep on my couch and I woke up and it might have been like 10:30, close to 11. And people were, one of my homies sent me a link and I was like, oh shit, okay. Because I was contemplating getting it. And my cable bill is going to be sky high because I rented one of those $20 movies that I'll get into and a couple of others. And I was just like, oh shit, I'm spending too much money, but fuck it. It's vacation. What else am I going to do? And so I got that link and I was watching. I woke up to see whenever Snoop Dogg was performing, I saw him do a couple songs. And then I heard like he was great doing the commentary. But the thing is, my link, the link that I got just kind of conked out. And then I looked at something, was able to find another one. Somebody had an Instagram Live and it was just like somebody had a phone or an iPad set up. And then it was streaming to the, it was set in front of the TV. So I couldn't really hear Snoop's commentary, but they said he did great, which doesn't surprise me because I've watched him do those reality shows where he's like Coach Snoop or whatever. And then the stuff where he was coaching his son that was playing football was like talented enough to get on at USC. Then he decided he was going to be like a designer or something, a model or something. I don't know. Yeah. So it did not surprise me that Snoop did well. I did see a clip where when Nate got knocked out, Snoop went straight into like a Negro spiritual. Oh man, that just looked really bad, and it looked extremely racist. I don't know what to tell you. That's just how I felt about that shit. But just glad that Roy Jones and Mike Tyson didn't get hurt severely or anything. Roy just looked like he was winded. Somebody said he looked like he had to pee because he kept moving. But yeah, I'm glad that nobody got hurt, thankfully. What else this week? What else happened this week, you guys? Dave Chappelle, Unforgiven, dropped a special on Instagram. First he does YouTube about 5 months ago, and then drops this one. I'm just gonna call these things. People's like, I don't know if it was funny or whatever. It's a lot of people that put out specials on these platforms that are not funny, are not good, and do not deserve to be called specials. This Dave Chappelle thing, I'm just gonna call it specials for lack of a better term, because they are special. Because Dave's doing it. Why? Because people are paying attention to it when he does it. Dave Chappelle, I think the homies Damian Lemon and Ali Muhammad alluded to this or explicitly said this on their show in the Conversation podcast, that Dave's basically become a griot. He's a storyteller. He's always been a storyteller, but as he gets older, he's just evolved into more of a griot, to where he is just on stage talking and telling his story. And, you know, you talk about, like, you've heard me say, and you've probably heard this from a lot of other people, when you see somebody that's great at something, especially when it comes to acting, you say, like, man, I would watch Viola Davis read the phone book. I would watch, you know, I don't know, Denzel read the phone. Any of these people that you love, anybody that you know and love and you appreciate their work as an actor, you feel that way, or you might have said something like that, or you've heard me say something like that before. Dave Chappelle, I mean, I would pay to just sit in a room and listen to him talk. It doesn't have to be funny. He's put in that sweat equity of being hilarious for 32 years or however long he's been doing it. And it's compelling. It's beautiful. It's fucking masterful how he can tell a story and weave in his points, the stuff that he wants to drive home, the narrative he's creating on stage. It's amazing, and it's something to behold. So I thought it was great. I think I watched it maybe three or four times, and it's essentially him talking about being shafted by a comedian when he was a young comic, and then when he's 28 years old and he gets into a bad deal with Comedy Central with Chappelle show. And it was great. It was compelling. And, you know, I kind of watched it and enjoyed it by myself and just kind of talked about it with a couple friends and just kind of let it hang. And then I was listening to I didn't read too much about it, just like I didn't read much about him, what he did on SNL. I just enjoyed it for myself and just kind of, you know, did talk. Maybe I talked about it on. I did talk about it here. It's like, oh, Dave, you know, he did his thing and blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of put it back on the bookshelf, the virtual bookshelf, if you will. And I was listening to a comic, a white comic who I respect a lot, who I think is very talented, has been in the game for years. And he was talking about it on his podcast, and he's white, and I was just kind of taken aback by the fact that, you know, he said, he thought that it was poorly timed because it's Thanksgiving week and because of the subject matter. Dave was talking about being shafted by this corporation, by Comedy Central, and all these people that are dying and lost jobs and all this stuff and in a pandemic. And why he chose to. And he said some of the same things that I said about Dave, you know, was very like, said he's one of the greats, blah, 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 and all these platitudes and everything. But it just kind of rung false to me. It seemed kind of, because a white guy said it, it felt to me, I don't think it was his intent, but I felt as a black man, and it was just like, nigga, you got your money, you're rich, fuck you. Who cares? Everybody gets shafted at it, and that's what it felt like to me. And it just made me feel like even some of the smartest people, even some of the people that may on the surface be a white ally, oftentimes are missing an ingredient when it comes to being black in America. When it comes, it's just a blind spot that they don't have, and it's a blind spot that's causing me to really just to reject them. And I don't know if that's the best thing to do, but I oftentimes have a visceral reaction to when I hear people say things about black people and they're not black. And one of the reasons is because they don't do it with their white peers. And they don't seem to hold those same people accountable. And when the black guy is just telling his story, when what we don't know this, you know, I'm not Dave Chappelle stan, you know, I'm a fan of this guy. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've known who he was before the Chappelle show. I was a fan, and I've liked him, but it's just something that I feel, it just rubs me the wrong way when I hear white people who are in the game criticize or try to tell you, say what Dave should have done and what he are dictating when he put stuff out. Because there's been a lot of comedians that put out projects this year. I'm one of them. He's one of them. He's put out actually two. But then Dave can't, you know, release something for free. He can't release a free thing and talk about what he wants to talk about. Get the fuck out of here, man. You want to bring up stuff that he might, his stand up that he's done to try to just like try to indict this guy for what we know now, for what we know as it stands on November 29th. I don't know of any fucked up shit that Dave's done to women. Or anybody else. I don't know this. So as of November 29th, 2020 seems to be like a decent fucking guy. Just a decent person, like I'm striving to be, and who's just brilliant at stand up. So when I hear that, it's just like, no, you don't do this to the people. And then had the nerve to bring up somebody who he's worked with, who they've both worked with, and who he made some good money from. Now, he ain't asked, he didn't say anything about what somebody else who happens to be white and super famous comic that just started speaking up about bullshit that's going on in society. He's made money from that guy. He hasn't asked him, hey, man, why aren't you saying X, Y, Z about things that are going on in the world? But Dave has to do it. Black guy has to do it. Black dude. Come on, man. That shit ain't, it ain't, black people always have to do this. We always have to be the moral, we always have to be these magical Negroes. Why can't he just be a guy telling his story? You don't have to like everything somebody does, but Jesus Christ, man. What the fuck? It incenses me that we constantly have to go through this all the time. Every time this man puts something out, you can critique it. It's fine. You can critique stuff. But it just seems like he has to be like I'm just not liking this people trying to establish their morality on the back of somebody's art. Because it's just art. It's not, you know, it's, and then you don't do it with other people. And it just seems to be like these black, the first time I started to realize it was after I played The Last of Us. I was a year late to the game. And I finished it. I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing game. And this is incredible. I love this story. It was powerful. It was amazing. And then people like want to talk about what Joel did and what this thing was. Like, no, in the world of this story, he did X, Y, and Z. You're not a better person than me because you think that he should have did X. You're not a better person because you think this fictional character did this, and trying to prove this higher ground that you're better, this fucking sanctimonious bullshit. Let me see if that's the right, like, you're teaching somebody something. Let me see if I hope I got that right for using that word, but I'm gonna look it up. Fuck it. My mother used to say, if you don't know what it is, you don't know what something is, look it up. But I think I said it right. Making a show of being morally superior to other people. Yeah, it's fucking sanctimonious. It is. I was right. Where, especially off of art, especially like off of a video game, off of somebody talking for 18 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour. Look, I don't agree with everything Dave Chappelle says, but as a part of the whole, it's just like, he's a brilliant comedian. Some things I laugh at, some things I don't, but he's one of the best to ever do it. It's undeniable. And just because he's rich, he can't have an opinion. He can't say, oh my God, this hurt me. He's not allowed to have emotions or have these feelings about how he was treated on a low, low level. Like, I'll never. Yeah, he's got his money now. But when I was like, there's successes that I've had in my life. I'll never forget not booking Teen Summit. It's something that I'll think about for the rest of my life. And because maybe I'll shift this to take it to somewhere else. But I've talked about this before. I think I might have talked about it on Three Guys On, but whatever. It's applicable to what's going to this. When I was 16 years old, I auditioned to be on Teen Summit. And it was a show on BET where you have two hosts, like two adult grown up hosts. Ananda Lewis used to be on it. Prince DeJure was on it. I'm trying to think of the other host. I don't remember. And you had this audition, you're there for the whole day, and you talk about these different subjects, and I was doing my thing. I was not, I wasn't dressed super cool and hip. My mom took me to Tyson's Corner, and we went to, did I go to Tyson's Corner? I had on some linen shorts and like a button down short sleeve shirt. I looked nice. I don't even think, like, I think maybe back then I kind of might have had a Carlton Banks vibe. And I didn't, and but whatever it was, whatever I was talking about, when we were, I went to Catholic schools. A lot of other kids went to the schools in DC. They went to public schools and stuff. And they, I don't even know if I was like a he speaks so well, but I was outspoken in school and stuff like that. And I could talk. We'd have good discussions in class and I could, you know, make my point. And I felt like I could, I felt, this is me getting my JL on. I felt like I could, my JL Covan, shout out to that man. I will go to my grave thinking that I would have done a great job on that show, that I was, I could have been a good member of the posse, the young teens that got to talk and ask questions. I didn't get it. And I was devastated. That was the first big devastating loss that I had in show business. And I remember like getting the letter, unfortunately you did not make, but whatever the fuck. And I remember crying. And I think my aunt called me and I was talking to her. She said, Chris, you know, you don't get everything you go out for. And that's the first time that I, because prior to that, everything had gone pretty well for me as far as like going out for stuff and trying out for things and stuff like that. And it had gone pretty well for me. And that was the first time that I took an L like that. And as you get older, you learn that, you know, you don't always get everything. And but I had to learn that. And that's how I learned. I was devastated. But I was thinking to myself, I said, you know what? Maybe I won't go full Carlton Banks. I'll give it a shot next year, but I won't go Carlton. I will wear jeans to the audition. And I had a polo shirt on. And I still wore glasses. And I don't know if this was in between. I think this might have been in between my second time auditioning. But I remember being on the show, being like an audience member on the show. And sometimes the kids in the audience get to ask questions. And I remember Shannon Briggs was on there, former heavyweight champ, heavyweight boxer. I don't know if he was ever the champ. I don't know. Maybe he was. But he was a big time boxer. And Rosie Perez was on, and I asked a question. I don't really remember what it was, but I asked a question to one of them, maybe to Shannon Briggs, and I got a really good answer. And there were parents, there were other adults, like after the show, wow, you should have been in the posse. And I was like, yeah, I know, I auditioned. But like people were saying that to me afterwards, and I should have been on there. But maybe they didn't think I was black enough or urban enough to be on that show. To speak in like complete sentences. And I wasn't like I wasn't a young Republican. I was just a kind of a nerd that liked black shit, that understood stuff for what a 16-year-old could, you know, understand about the world. And being a young black teen, I felt I was capable enough to be on that show. And I said to myself, maybe I'll try to dress a little cooler, but I'm not going to change who I am just to fit this show, to compromise myself or to act a certain way. And I auditioned the next time and I went harder, still didn't get it. And I was like, okay, I'm done. And then a year or two after I left, I've seen some people that I knew that were on the show from my high school. And I was like, yeah, this is a different thing. And I'm just have to move on. And I'll never forget that. That was a learning experience for me. And I'm sure Dave didn't, because he kept mentioning it. He mentioned that in his set about somebody stealing a joke from him when he was 15. Somebody, you know, him getting shafted, him like the three-card Monty thing he's talking about. I don't care who you are or how famous you are. You have things in your life that you, I don't know if you maybe never get over. I'm not saying I never got over that, but maybe I still feel some kind of way about it. How about that? I feel some kind of way about not making that. And I think what it's what you do with those situations where you've taken a loss on something that you tried for, you know. And I think there's art in that. And then how you respond to that, what you do after. I've been on TV several times. I've been on Broadway. I've done a lot of cool things in my career. But I still think about that, not getting on that fucking show. But I don't lose sleep over it. But I just say, at my low level of being in show business, I can understand why Dave did that, why he talked about that. And I think that podcaster, that comedian, that white comedian is being reductive. But that and I don't think that guy is racist, but it kind of sure did kind of fucking seem like it when you don't talk about your other peers that way. Who are more of, there's other white comedians that are further along or quote unquote more successful. Because I don't even, as much as I love Bill Burr, I didn't see some people were mad a little bit on Twitter for a couple days and they let it go. Just like they'll let everything else go. But I just noticed he didn't get it as much as Dave did. I don't know. And then people were upset about was it Candace Owens being on Tim Dillon's show. Tim Dillon's a comic, New York comic. Funny guy, really good on the mic, exceptional on the mic as a broadcaster. I don't always agree with it. You know, folks say he's going to be like the next Alex Jones or Rush Limbaugh and all that shit. You know, people, it wasn't a surprise to me that she was on his show. I don't think Tim would get anybody, I think it was tongue in cheek when he said that, you know, they're going to be there. You know, he doesn't have the marginalized, you know, community on his show. There's no black women. And he chooses Candace Owens to be on his show of all black women, even Candace of all people to have on the show. He puts her on there because she's outspoken, because she speaks against black people. Those are the people that are going to be on a show like Tim Dillon's because they continue to feed the narrative of white people just being okay. You're not that bad. You're not as bad as they say you are. You're not that. So there, people like that, there's always going to be a place for them, and there's always going to be a place for them to make money in that regard. So what I'm telling you now is that I'm going to shift this show to be... I'm going to turn into a coon, guys. No, it's just like, I don't think Tim will get any backlash from that. He won't. But if I did, if Rod and Karen had her on, if Randolph and Andy had her on, you wouldn't hear the end of it. That's a freedom that my white counterparts have. That they can exist. They can exist without being ridiculed or called out for it. Not to say that I want to have Candace Owens on the show, but if I did, my black ass would be, I would be done before I even got started. People would not respect me. Tim Dillon has nothing to lose when Candace Owens is on his show, or if, you know, like guys like the Legion of Skanks, when they had Milo on their show, they didn't have anything, but Rebecca Trent did. They were going to cancel Rebecca before they canceled the Legion of Skanks guys, because they had it at the Creek, and that, you know, RIP to the Creek. It's two Americas, man. It's two Americas. One where you can be white. You can do what you want. You can when I say that, you know what the fuck I'm talking about. So don't try to act dumb. You know what I'm talking about. You can exist for yourself, you can say, you know, there's no, what do we always say? There's no black people are not a monolith. We're not all the same. We don't all think the same, but white people damn sure aren't, because you can be a white artist and just be for self and just say, you know, this is my art. This is what I'm doing. Or if X happens to me, you know, it happens. And if I want to talk about it, I can talk about it in whatever way that I want to talk about it. And nobody's, people might say something, but I don't give a shit. I'm doing what I want to do. Dave Chappelle tells his story, whether, no matter how much money he has, or he talks about it. Oh, I don't know if he should have said that. I mean, he should be thinking about the conditions of everything going on in the world. And he, before he speaks, he needs to consider everything that I think he should consider as a white man before even speaking. And he should just, you know, he should adhere to these rules. But my white friends, just go ahead and do what you want to do. You see it all the time, man. You see it all the time. And I feel like I had to say something about it. I'm trying to be as vague as I can. I don't want to shit on anybody. I know I usually just talk about life as I see it on this show. And the few hundreds of you that listen, I appreciate it. And I'm going to continue to speak this way. I'm not going to bite my tongue, especially when I see some bullshit like that. It's just when you I don't know, man. Because I know comedians listen to me. They might not retweet it, but they'll text. They might not retweet the show, but they'll text me and say, "Yo, man." Oh man. Ah, oh, boy. Yeah, man. Shit. It's just two different Americas. And then the thing about it is, though, the thing that annoys me the most is you have some of these white comics that say you can't say anything, and they're trying to cancel. It's like it's all sizzle and no steak. It's not the bark is loud, but the bite's not strong. Like, you have these people talk all this shit on Twitter. They're trying to cancel, and then they're trying to cancel me. We can't say what we, and then you see their act. You ain't talking about shit. You're not talking about anything. You're not moving the bar. It's just you're not. And then you're not even that good, and it's mediocre. And that goes to a lot of that, even black ones that talk about it. Just comedians in general, for all this talk, just write a good joke. Tell your story. Write a good joke. Can you do that? Because it seems like it's been more time where people are on Twitter and they're talking all this shit, and you go see them. This is pre-COVID, and you see them. It's like, you ain't talking about shit. You're not doing it. You're not doing anything. It's not funny. You're wasting people's time. Somebody else could be up there working on something. It's just like, and you complain about this stuff when we should all be trying, as artists, we should all be trying to get better. And when the difficulty setting gets hard, you turn it off. Like, it's like a video game. Like, when it gets too hard, you turn it off. When you're losing, when the game is on all Madden and it gets a little too hard, that blitz is coming, you don't try to adjust. You just cut it off. You say, I'm not going to play anymore. Adjust to that shit. Try to get better. That's the fun. That's where the fun is. Try to be more tactful. Like, stand-up is one of the hardest things to do in the performing arts, and it's the least respected. And when you do it well, it makes people think it's so easy that they can do it. That's therein lies the rub. And then because people like Dave Chappelle do it so well, people think that he's just up there talking, and there's no art to it. There's no craft to it. But there is. It is. It's hard. I don't know. I do know. No, I know. Just get better. Get your jokes up, man. Shit. And we can't do that. We can't do that in the way that you, like, I've been writing. I have stuff. I got low key feel inspired. I was talking to a friend this morning where it's just like all this stuff is happening. And it's gonna, and when we get to do it the right way, not like outside wearing a fucking parka. Yeah, it's cool that you went outside and you did stand up during the pandemic. I guess it's cool. I don't know. But when you can do it the right way, you best believe I'm gonna be ready. Am I gonna be a little rusty? Probably. Yeah. But I got bars. I've always had bars. You can listen to Failed Running Back. That's there's stuff, there's good shit. It's my story. It's me. It's me. And it's good. I don't care if I'm not heralded by in a fucking magazine, or that a certain network let me do 6 minutes on their Oh, man. Oh, God. Well, what else did I want to say? Yeah, just can we just try to get better? Can we just use it as a call to arms and just try to write better jokes and try to be funny and not try to be, I don't know, malicious and hurt people. Just tell a joke. Just write some good shit. If you write good shit, people will laugh. If you're there to just, you know, be middle of the road, there's a place for you there. There's a place for you. But if you're going to try to move the baton, if you're going to try to push the bar, like, I don't know, if you want to try to improve on the design, let's do that. Hang out with me and some of my friends, you know? I don't know. Yes, I do. I do know. Let's get better. Let's just try to fucking get better. All right. Instagram. Oh, was it Instagram? Okay. So I did write this down as a note. This random guy, I think I might still be friends with him on Facebook. This kid that I went to elementary school with, and I think high school with too. I hadn't talked to him in years. And he ran, I guess he's following me on Instagram, and he like randomly sent me a couple pictures of our like preschool graduation. And he didn't have any comment or anything. I'm not following him on Instagram or any, I don't know if we're friends on, I have so many friends on Facebook. It doesn't even mean shit, but he sends me this and I was like, oh, okay. And I just wrote him back. I was just like, oh, blast from the past. Thanks for sharing. He didn't write anything back. This kid, he's 40 now. I remember getting into a fight with this dude in junior high where he were trying to kind of going back and forth and we were playing football outside. He scratched me and I pummeled his ass, and I don't give a fuck if he's listening to this or not. Statute of limitations is over. We were 12 and, or 11, whatever. And he scratched me and I just pummeled him, and I was so angry at this kid that I was crying. I was just like bawling. I was just like, it was just weird because he sends me that thing like, he sent it to me like he didn't remember he's fucking scratched me. And it was a deep scratch too. Like he just had it, like it was a prison scratch, like he was trying to cut me or some shit. And that was on my face for a long ass time. that scar. And then he sends me that like he didn't remember that shit happened. It's fucking weird, man, people are. Do they forget that? Do you forget that? If you were a bully, he wasn't even a bully. He was smaller than me, but he was just like talking shit. And then it just got to a point where we had to fight. Like we just have to fucking fight. I wasn't a fighter, but I wouldn't let anybody, you know, make a fool out of me. I didn't take any shit from anybody when I was a kid, you know? I don't know. That's a weird thing. I wonder, did he remember, like, oh, I got in a fight with Chris. Maybe I should just take that memory and just, you know, remember that we went to school together and, I don't know. It's fucking weird when people reach out like that. I'm not famous or anything. I don't know. Then I think about that kid. And I think about, like, yeah, perspective is a motherfucker, though. I was thinking about that, like, that kid, his parents weren't together. And then he had a sister that was older than, like, a year older. And his dad used to bring him McDonald's almost every day, like, takeout, like, fast food every day. And I remember as being a kid, like, 9-10 years old, like, hey, this kid gets McDonald's and Popeyes every day, and we just get our, like, lunch, you know, our little sandwich and apple, nutritious lunch or whatever these kids get at McDonald's. And you just think, like, oh, well, maybe his parents couldn't pack his lunch, or you think about that now, and it's just like, it's kind of like sad. I was talking about that with a friend who's one of my closest friends. We were talking about that one time, and it's just like, fuck, man. You don't know what that kid's going to. He still didn't have to fucking scratch me. You know, he could have just hit me. But the scratch, he was like, he literally left the mark. I don't think, it's not still there. It's not still on my face anymore, but he literally left a mark. And you think about that shit, it's like, well, what was that kid going through? And then I'm saying something about him, and then we were both, you know, shouldn't have been fighting and shit. But, and then he sends me this thing, you know, I don't know, maybe that, I mean, we got over it, you know, I definitely got over it, but I, you know, it just made me think. Perspective, it's a motherfucker. I forgot to tell you, I did not, while I didn't make a turkey or anything, this past week, I did make some of the best shrimp that I've ever made. I made the best shrimp that I ever made in my life. Normally, I don't know why I didn't think of this before. It's something that you are probably, you're going to listen to me say what I'm about to say, and you just roll your eyes and say, Chris, you're a fucking idiot, but I still love your podcast. So normally I would just, I don't know if I saw this on TV or not, but when you just put a little oil in the skillet, that's what I do, and you season it as it's cooking, and it's fine. But I said, let me just try this. Let me just clean the shrimp, wash it off, and then let me season it a little bit in a bowl, you know, a mixing bowl or whatever. Put my season. I just did like some Old Bay and like maybe like some garlic and like crushed like cayenne pepper or something like that. Whatever I had in the cabinet. And then I cooked it. And then I finished it off with some lemon juice, and it tasted great. It was just it was good. I've just really impressed myself, and I just thought I'd share that with you guys. All right. So I'll continue to do that from here on out. I did make some chicken on Friday. I had some chicken in the freezer, and I took it out, let it thaw out. I did what a black mother would appreciate. I took the chicken out of the freezer and let it thaw out. Then I brined it for most of the day, and it had a couple, like three or four pieces. Oh my God, it was really good. It was John Legend's chicken recipe, and it turned out good. And I had this, You ever had this Mike's? Is it Mike's Hot Honey? Is that what it is? Mike's Hot Honey. Yeah, it is Mike's Hot Honey. And I think, are they based out of Brooklyn? I believe that they are, I think. But anyway, it's really good. And it's like, it's a sweet and it's slightly spicy. And my God, it was really good. But it's just kind of it's kind of messy when you make fried chicken, like with the grease and all that stuff. But I'm pretty talented, you guys, as a chef. I saw people, I saw a female comic in particular. I'm like calling people out and not really calling them out. Wouldn't you like that if I just fucking went there? and I try to have some mystery. Well, I saw a female comic say, oh, Thanksgiving is a time where some shit where like women have to cook or take orders again from men or some bullshit. When mostly every time I'm seeing somebody cook something, it's dudes. It's on Instagram. It's on Rod. Rod makes his meals for him and Karen. Karen, I would assume, I don't know what goes on in that household, but it seems like Rod's doing all the cooking and he likes it. Michael Felder, I know for a fact, shout out to Michael Felder, who when this pandemic's over, I got to figure out a way to get to Mike in Chicago and have him make me some food. Cause it looks like that shit looks like something that it's at a restaurant and he makes it all from scratch. All this stuff I'm seeing, that's just two guys, but I'm seeing dudes, a lot of male comedians, they're making their own food. We don't need a woman. We don't need women to make our food. I think it's cool if a woman can cook or something like that, but I'm seeing more dudes cook. Randolph, shout out to Randolph, he's making the food. A lot of guys that I know, they're making their own food. They're doing more of the cooking than their wives and partners are doing. So it seems. So I think that was a false Instagram post that female comic made. I bet a man made her some food. I bet. And I don't mind cooking for a woman. One time I made a girl turkey burgers. And she's like, oh my God, these turkey. She was white, but she just loved it. She's married though. Let's not talk about her. Yeah, so I thought I'd share that. I think that's bullshit. I think that's like kind of we're over that. Men are cooking and we'll show you what we cooked. I mean, I've got a couple of those. I made a prime rib early on in the pandemic when my oven worked. It was good. It was amazing. It was incredible. I'm like, how did I do? Last Christmas, I made prime rib and cost a pretty penny. Not as much as the one I made this past April, but my dad did buy it. And I, for some reason, they lost the coupon that I won from the raffle at work. We used to do a Thanksgiving, like a turkey raffle where you'd win a free turkey, which is like a $25 or $50 Butterball gift certificate or something that you could use towards your groceries. And it's a pretty good amount of money. I think it might have cost like 50 or 60 bucks. And my parents entrusted me with making this thing. And I looked at a recipe on YouTube. I think it was Food Wishes, actually. And I made the prime rib. And I told you about it last year. But it made my mother, she was like, oh my God. She was on the phone. She had to stop what she was doing. And she had to give me props. You know? So, no, men are, we're doing that. We're doing that role. And I don't think anybody's really complaining about it. All right, let's get to some TV, music, and movies, and then we'll wrap this thing up. I've been watching this miniseries called A Teacher on Hulu, and I'll read you this blurb. Should I be able to find? I thought I had this open. I did have it open. I was trying to see if I could get the blurb here. Okay, here we go. Damn, this is long as shit. Okay, I'll read it, whatever. This drama series examines the complexities and consequences of an illicit sexual affair between a young teacher and her student. Claire is a new teacher at Westbrook High School in Texas. Dissatisfied in her marriage to her college sweetheart, Claire's life changes when Eric, a personable teenager in her English class, takes an interest in her. Popular and outgoing, Eric is the captain of the soccer team and nearly inseparable from his best friends. Everything seems perfect on the surface, but Eric is forced to juggle the pressures of school, applying for college, and a part-time job, all while helping take care of his two younger brothers. Claire and Eric discover an undeniable connection that allows them to escape their lives, but their relationship accelerates faster than either could anticipate. The permanent damage left in the wake of their illicit affair becomes impossible for them and their friends and family to ignore. This stars Nick Robinson as Eric and Kate Mara as Claire Wilson. It's good. It's one of those shows where it's one of those shows like I was talking about the past few weeks. If I'm seeing a piece of art where it's like, okay, this is making me feel something. I'm talking to the television and there's nobody in my apartment with me, and I'm fulfilling these black stereotypes by talking back at my TV, and it's good. I really dig it. You know, these motherfuckers shouldn't be doing this, but they do it. This was based on a film of the same name that came out in 2013, and it was directed by Hannah Fadel. And I don't think, I may have seen this. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe this is also on Hulu. But she directed some of these episodes, and I believe, is she a producer? She's an EP on this as well. And it's good. It's good. My only thing is, I was kind of surprised at the structure of the show, that it's only like a half an hour. I thought there were going to be hour-long episodes, but they're stringing it out into 10. I was thinking they'd give us a good 5 or 6 if they combined them all. You know, if they, you know, put some of these together. But either way, it's compelling stuff. The latest episode, the last episode, which came out on, which was episode 5, which came out last week, was like, oh my God, to Kate Mara's character. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you even telling, like, oh shit. But then I think it's similar to what happens in the movie. And, it was like, what the fuck are you doing? But in the movie, I don't think she had a man. She's just scamming on this young boy. But it's good. It's really compelling. You might even, I mean, if you haven't started watching it now, you low key could wait a couple weeks until the end of December. And just December 29th is when the last one comes out, according to the wiki. And just binge them all. But this is good. It's something that comes out, was this like every Tuesday? They dropped 3 of them on November 10th. And then, yeah, so they come out every Tuesday on Hulu. They like to do that rollout that they're doing, shell them out. So I recommend A Teacher. Also, I rewatched season 4 of, I watched every episode of Insecure. I just rewatched them all and finished that up yesterday. God damn, that show's really good. It's really good. Like I was a fan from the jump, but just taking them all in, God, that's a good show. It's so good. It's almost like you just never seen young black people portrayed in that way, just being regular people existing with their faults and their insecurities and just dealing with life, man, dealing with their shit. It's really good. It's one of my favorite shows on TV. The characters are great, the interesting and stuff like that, but just really when it comes to, I don't know, stylistically, I love it. I love the shots that they make. I love the shot setup, and you know, sometimes when they'll have a wide shot, and like I think there was a shot in particular that I remember. Like I remember Molly, I think maybe she was getting her nails done or something, and she's on the right hand corner of the shot, and it's just this wide shot of her, and she's like thinking about some shit. Or in some character, get another character gets some news. They're like in the corner of the. It's so good. It's such a good show. On all levels, from a technical standpoint, the acting, the writing, it's really good. Really good. Issa Rae is. She's obviously becoming a mogul and whatnot, but it just took a second look for me. I haven't. That was a show. I did find myself like a Breaking Bad. I would go back after the episode premiered. I would watch it and then rewatch the episode again. But I hadn't gone back and, you know, rewatch and just kind of absorb again all in a short amount of time within like 3 to 5 days. It's a fantastic show. I got to find something else to get into. I started watching The Crown, but it was like really early this morning and I watched maybe 20 minutes of it. It's good. I like quite a few of the actors in it, like Claire Foy. And so I think that's the only one that the guy who plays the whatever. It's good so far and I'm hearing good things about it. I just need to be compelled to get back into it. But it was really early in the morning. I was up late after that fight. So I did start The Crown. Music. I want to talk about, I've only really gotten into one album this week, which was Kismet Green by Carlita Durand, who is from Durham, North Carolina. Really talented singer, songwriter. I found out about her through her work with Little Brother, and I believe it started on the Get Back album in 2007. And she had some projects. Her last project, I think, was do I want to say 2015? Let me look this up before I tell you the wrong thing. It might have been 2014. Carlita, I didn't know I was going to talk about, I knew I was going to talk about her, but let's see. I'll Be Gorgeous When I Die was her first proper release. That was 2015. Cause I remember buying like the MP3. Yeah. April 26, 2015. This Kismet Green is dope. It's like, she is one of the things I appreciate about her. Like she's a good, great singer and great songwriter, but the melodies, like the production is just like mellow, like in the pocket. And she's got some grooves and it's just on point. And most of the records have like a nice groove to it where you could like nod your head, and she's obviously dope. And, she's cool. And I met her in real life. She came to one of my first stand-up gigs in like 2010, actually, on Hannibal Buress's show. The first time I did Hannibal's show, first and the only time Hannibal hosted when I was there. I'm buddies with JB, who is an MC out of Oakland. You heard me talk about him before. He's been on the show. He won an Emmy Award winner, JB out of OKC. We were just cool on Twitter. And we were just cool on Twitter. And I think like he He was in town at the time, and he tweeted something about, like, you know, hey, what's fun? What can I do while I'm in New York? And I just tweeted at him and said, come to the Knitting Factory at 9 o'clock on Sunday or whatever. Might have been that day. And then we exchanged numbers, and he was like, cool. He came to the show. Carlita Duran was there, was with him. And I think they were, like, working on a record, which ended up being on this project called the Doug and Patty EP, which is an EP dedicated to the TV show Doug, which has a lot of dope songs. It's really fucking good. It's out there. Let me see if I could find. Okay, the Doug and Patty. So she's like, the Kismet Green is on Instagram, not Instagram. It's on wherever you listen and stream music. Like your Spotify, Tidal, wherever. It's there. But the Doug and Patty EP, I think you can find it maybe on Doug and Patty. Patty EP. Oh shit. Yeah, Carlita Duran and Vaughn Garcia present the Doug. It's on her actually it's on her Bandcamp. So you get it for $5 on her Bandcamp. It's some good shit. Like, she had a record with JB called Lost Love, and that's it's a nice jam. I think there's a video. Should be a video on YouTube. I know they did a video of it. And that came out in 2009. Yeah. Well, maybe they had already worked together when we... I don't know. But they were in town together working and stuff. And they came to the show. They were really cool. They were really nice. Fun fact. But Kismet Green, it's dope. If you're looking for something new to listen to, Nicolay dropped a new EP out that maybe I'll talk about next week, because I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it. I got to play some more 2K and just vibe out. That's how I vibe out to new music if I'm not driving around. This quarterback looks, I don't know what this kid from Denver, he just comes up. He's scrambling. So I highly recommend that. And I want to get into some movies. Let's get into some movies. Let's see. Where do I want to go? Okay. First movie I want to talk about is One Night in Miami, which is directed by Regina King. Let's see. Here we go. On the night of February 25th, 1964 in Miami, Cassius Clay joins Jim Brown, Sam Cooke, and Malcolm X, and they discuss the responsibility of being successful black men during the civil rights movement. This is directed by Regina King, as I said before, and is a screenplay is by Kemp Powers, and I'm trying to see if Kemp Powers wrote this play. He is best known for his work on the play One Night in Miami, the 2020 film adaptation. So he did the adaptation as well. This was a good movie. It did feel like a play because it's just dudes in a room. It's just dudes in a hotel room on the night that Muhammad Ali won the heavyweight championship when he beat Sonny Liston in 1964. And it stars Leslie Odom Jr., who played Sam Cooke, Kingsley Ben-Adir played Malcolm X, Eli Gorey played Cassius Clay, and Aldis Hodge plays Jim Brown. I think they all did a great job. I was watching this. I think this comes out on Christmas Day in theaters, air quotes, and then I believe in January on Amazon Prime. It was kind of like dudes in a room, and it did feel like a play, and I thought it was well acted. I really liked the acting. It's kind of hard because this is an ensemble piece who you think would get considered for awards. And I think maybe I'd go with Kingsley Ben-Adir for Malcolm X, because he seemed to do like a lot of the heavy lifting at most of it. And then Leslie Odom Jr. coming in. Maybe both of them get nominated for supporting actors. I don't know. It seemed I was watching this. I was like, okay, Malcolm X is this fictionalized version of Malcolm X is really fucking judgmental, and it gets to the point where it's kind of a payoff at the end, like a really beautiful payoff actually, where I'm watching this like early in the morning, and like maybe 5 or 6 in the morning, and just like, holy shit, this is really, I'm getting chills watching this, like goosebumps watching this scene, the sequence that Regina King masterfully, put together. And I could see this being best picture. I could see maybe, I don't know. I could see it getting there, getting a nomination. I just think it's just a good movie. I did like it. I liked how they kind of just got at each other. They were kind of poking and prodding at each other. You know, basically what it is, like, how can you be good for your community as a black person who's successful? Again, black men, when you get to a certain level of fame, more is required from you. To whom? God, why does this sound so fucking loud? I guess this mic just picks up everything. But when to whom much is given, much is expected. Heavy lies the hair, the head that wears the crown. You know, with great power comes great responsibility. All that stuff. And that's basically what these four dudes are dealing with in this film. And it's not like, some white dude that just gets to make art or just gets to pursue their craft. And I don't want to say this, but I'm saying that, what I said before, there are two Americas. And as a black person, if I am able to ascend to a certain level and to try to help as many people as I can, I don't see that as a problem. It's something that I would, if I were ever in that situation, I would like to think that I would be trying to reach back and pull other people up, So I don't see that as a problem. I just see that as where I see that some of my white counterparts don't have to do that. That's not necessarily expected from them. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'm just making a note of that. So I really dug this. So see it when you can. I was able to get a screener of it, and it's terrific. It's just a good ass movie. You know what I mean? Second movie I want to talk about is called Let Him Go. This movie stars Diane Lane and Kevin Costner. Let me read this blurb. Following the loss of their son, a retired sheriff, and his wife leave their Montana ranch to rescue their young grandson from the clutches of a dangerous family living off the grid in the Dakotas. This film was written and directed by Thomas Bazooka, and it's based on the novel of the same name, which was written by Larry Watson. And I believe this was 2013. Yes, 2013 this came out. And I was talking about this movie, and I saw this trailer, and I was like, this shit looks fucking good. And this was a $20 joint, guys. It is worth it. But I want to say that, if you watch it in with the missus, a fan, your partner, whoever, it's definitely worth seeing. You get something out of it. I'm definitely gonna maybe get this for my dad. I definitely want him to see this, because this is like, he loves like the neo-Western stuff. This is another one, like much like No Country for Old Men. It's that same vibe, like that they call this. Wikipedia is the first time that I heard of it. Like this neo-Western drama that, kind of reminds you of The Last of Us in a lot of ways, where you get that description where the creators talked about being inspired by, No Country for Old Men and The Road, Cormac McCarthy. Anyway, 1963, this takes place. Diane Lane plays a a woman who breaks horses in Montana, and her. Oh, this is what I wanted to say. So I was talking about this with a buddy. I called a friend, and we were talking. And he's like, "Oh, what are you gonna do?" I was like, "I'm gonna watch this Kevin Costner, Diane Lane movie." He was like, "Oh yeah, Clark's parents, Superman's parents, the Kents." And I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, they did play. They were in the Man of Steel, you know, the Kents. What is the man? What I forget. I was talking about it this morning. Man of Steel." Man of Steel, 2013 film. Sorry, nerds, I don't remember their name, but it is Martha Kent, right? Martha Kent and Kevin Costner. Who is his Earth dad? Oh man, okay, hold, where? Because Kevin Costner was in this shit. Come on, come on, Wikipedia, don't let me down. I see Diane Lane. Well, golly. Come on, don't do this. Now I got to go to Kevin Costner's page when it should have just been in the cast list. Damn, man. I didn't know Kevin Costner did country music. Where's his filmography? What are we doing here? Filmography. See Kevin Costner. Jesus. Let me go to 2013. Jonathan Kent. Martha and Jonathan Kent. All right. So anyway, Kevin Costner's a retired cop, retired sheriff, 1963 Montana. Diane Lane's character breaks horses. She trains horses. And she does that with her son. The son's married, just had a newborn baby. One day, you know, son goes out working, trying to work, break this horse. Find out that the horse comes back without him. Kevin Costner goes out. This guy, son gets in an accident, snaps his neck. He's dead. They're left with his wife and their newborn kid. Out of necessity, their former daughter-in-law now marries this dude that's kind of suspect. He's of the Wee Boy family. And then they move away in the town, Diane Lane's character is driving. She sees her former daughter-in-law and her grandson a couple years later. And she doesn't see them. She sees them. They don't see her. She witnesses him hitting the kid and their former daughter-in-law. And she's like, oh no. She goes back home to her husband. And she's like, oh no, we gotta do something. This ain't right. This dude is hitting the kid, hitting his wife. And they decide that they're going to go bring them back because they don't want their grandson to be raised like that. They come to find out, they go back to their apartment. They find out that they moved and they moved out of town without telling them. And so they move to North. They decide that they're going to go to North Dakota to find them. And then they get introduced to the Wee Boys. And the matriarch of the family is played by Leslie Manville. The matriarch of the family, she is Blanche Weeboy. Leslie Manville plays her. She is fantastic. She's like, there's almost stuff there. So if you haven't seen the trailer for this, don't watch the trailer, especially if you're going to watch the movie. I highly recommend that you watch this movie. Even if you don't pay $20 for it, when you see it, do not look at the trailer. Just say, Chris Lambert recommended this movie to me. Don't look at the trailer because there's a part in there where I've kind of already told you too much, but all this shit is in the trailer. But I'm not going to tell you what's in the trailer after this. There's a moment in the film where it's like, oh, in the trailer where you're like, oh, shit, this is something different. Don't look at the trailer. I've said it like 7 or 8 times. Don't look at it. take my word for it. I'm not going to LeVar Burton you. I'm going to say, please take my word for it and see this movie. It's very compelling. The less that you know, the better off you'll be. It's worth it. I was unhappy with some of the ending. I get why they did it, but I don't necessarily agree with it. A taste thing, I just didn't like it because of the way that I felt about one of the characters, but I was not surprised that it happened, but I had issue with it. But it's in the overall scheme of things, it's totally fine, and I get why they did it. And that's all that I will say, but let him go. If you're into like these, like Kevin, like I could see Diane Lane getting nominated for this. Kevin Costner's character was very stoic and it fit the time that he was playing. It's a very understated performance. There's a lot of stuff in the lighter moments that of the film that were stuff that was unsaid, but you could tell by the way things played out in the film, in the scenes. I really loved the relationship that Diane Lane and Kevin Costner had. I was wondering, like, I think Diane Lane's always been hot. She's only 55, but they definitely aged her. I was like, Diane Lane, she ain't aged that much. And then when I looked at an interview, like when she was doing press for the film and stuff, I was like, okay, yeah, she's 55, but she don't look that old in real life. You know, like So I was like, okay, yeah, they definitely aged her up in this one. And she was married to Christopher Lambert, Tarzan, right? And Highlander. Yeah. She's married to him before she married and divorced Josh Brolin in 2013. All right. So Let Him Go. Fantastic movie. I highly recommend it. Very satisfying. Although I did not like the ending. Okay. I didn't like the ending. I didn't like the... Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. I've said too much already. Don't watch the trailer. Okay. The last movie that I saw, and we'll get the hell out of here, is a film called Words on Bathroom Walls. This movie, okay, here we go. Diagnosed with a mental illness during his senior year of high school, a witty, introspective teen struggles to keep it a secret while falling in love with a brilliant classmate who inspires him to open his heart and not be defined by his condition. This movie stars Charlie Plummer and Taylor Russell of Waves fame. It was directed by Thor Frudenthal, and this is based on a novel of the same name by Julia Walton. I like this movie, and the main reason why I wanted to see this movie is because Taylor Russell's in it, and I am a fan of her. I think she's a star, and I will watch her read the phone book. The Waves, it was a very understated and beautiful performance. And then this one was like kind of like night and day, where she was charming, she was bubbly, she had like a very vivacious personality, and she's playing a high school kid. And she wouldn't necessarily be a manic pixie dream girl, but it's good to see a black girl be the inspiration for a male lead, for a male character to want to be a better person, to work. You know, black woman being a, how do you say? Because I don't want to say like an age, just the beauty in her character made this guy want to step his game up and to not be afraid of opening up to her, you know, just being the catalyst to making him a more complete person. It was good seeing a black girl be in a role like that. And it was good to see her open up and be, from what I've seen, like I saw her in Escape Room and she's kind of just like the final girl, that type of character in a movie like Escape Room, where she's got emotional heft in that role. But I want to just really go back and watch that one. But like, obviously to me, and then Lost in Space, I guess I'm going to go back and watch that, 'cause I haven't finished watching that yet. And I just really like her. I'll check for her in anything she's in. There's a thing that I stumbled upon when I was looking at just looking at interviews. You know, after I watch a movie, I like to look at their pressers that they do. You know, I'll see if I can find this. Bear with me a moment here. And I promise that we'll get this, and I'll leave you on to hopefully have a great week. It's called, there's this short that she did called Unit Brian, and it's UNIT, first word, BRYAN, Brian, a bored retail store employee, Taylor Russell, is tasked with training the store's new employee, a friendly worker robot. It's like these robots in this town. It looks like it's in Canada, because Taylor Russell's Canadian, and like they filmed. It's like a mockumentary about these robots replacing humans, and Taylor Russell's character is a retail worker in a clothing store, and she's got to train this robot, you know, to sell clothes and shit. It's kind of funny. It's light and has a little bit of a heart to it, and she's great in that. So anything this girl's in, I'm gonna check her out. Anything this young woman is in, I'm gonna check her out. I dig her. And if you haven't seen Waves, it's fantastic. I talked about it when Sujata was on last week, how, you know, when you want to see yourself on screen, you're a fan of all these movies, and you want to see people look like you on film. One reaction is to write it yourself, which she did with Definition Please. But another thing is, like, when you see something, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I liked movies like American Beauty and Happiness and The Ice Storm and all these family movies like that came out like 20 years ago, and there were really no black people. And you get 20 years later, you get something like Waves that's just, to me, just as remarkable. And you see black people in it, and she's really the heart and soul of that movie. And I think I did have the homie Jeff Cerulli come back on when he was on earlier this year. One of the times that he was on, he was like, "Yeah, dude, I saw Waves. It was, yeah, it was great." So Taylor Russell's another, she's a fucking star, man. She's terrific. So I recommend Words on Bathroom Walls. It's on VOD, and you can rent that. It's like $6 or $7. It's worth it if you're into that genre. I don't know, like, part of me's been interested in I've liked these films where it's like, but it always, nah, like these teen dramas where somebody's sick, somebody's going through this, like, some tragedy, and it's just really fucking hard. And just these intense movies. I think the most recent one was that I've seen was before this was My Chemical Romance. I think that's another one of these young adult, these movies based on young adult novels. Pretty interesting. I'm kind of into that genre. I like it. And then I love the fact, like, I was going to see this eventually, but I was compelled to rent this one and not wait for streaming because of Taylor Russell. So I think she's fantastic. If you have not, if you want to see Waves, you can definitely, I would see that. And then if you want something, well, this isn't that light. This kid's dealing with schizophrenia, and it's interesting the way that that's played out. Like, I'm bigging up my girl Taylor Russell, but this kid, Charlie Plummer, is also phenomenal. He did a really good job. Andy Garcia is also in it. Walton Goggins is in it, playing like basically a straight man. It's interesting to see him play that. He did a good job. It's a good cast. Molly Parker plays his mother, and Molly Parker is on. Oh my God. I just said the name of the show. What's wrong with you, Chris? The Danger Will Robinson show. Oh my God, Chris. Oh my God. I can't. Lost in Space. And I didn't even have to look it up. I just had to calm myself down. Yeah, she's really good. It's just it's a solid movie. If you're into that sort of thing, I think you'd be into this one. If you're into this genre, I think you'll definitely be into it. Okay, so that's enough. I've blabbed enough on this one. I want to thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you, and I will talk to you next time.